USA.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, Greg Valdez giving us elaborate, very informative and informed descriptions of all these events. Very frightening. And you were in the middle of one answer there, and I wanted you to continue that story.
And going back to the radar shaft, what we were talking about earlier, they tested the frequency of the radar shaft, and it was tied to Longmont, Colorado. People are under the...
What do you mean test the frequency? How do you do that? This is like a metallic, kind of like angel hair or something.
We call this in Brooklyn metallic schmutz. Because this is metallic schmutz.
My dad, being my dad, if people knew him, he had a lot of contacts, so... They had a contact with the Air Force, and they told them they found this radar chat. Person didn't want to go on record and say, well, where did you get it? That stuff's classified. You're not supposed to have it. So they did some analysis for him on the side, and they were able to determine which frequency it was designed to block. It was designed to block the Longmont, Colorado radar station, which covers Dulce. Most people assume because Dulce's in New Mexico that Albuquerque radar station would be the one that would... The frequency would be applied to that, but it was actually Longmont. And that made sense because Dulce's so close to Colorado. And that was the radar station they were trying to block. So,
why are they doing this? Just for testing?
Yeah, just the whatever they were aircraft testing they were doing up there was to cover either their tracks or the mutilations themselves. And when you get into the story of the Dulce base, which we'll get to later, that's a whole other can of worms. We're just barely in the beginning of it now with the cattle. But this is what was the early stuff of Dulce, was all this military implications. Like I said, the humidity sensor, the gas mask, they were finding evidence of, in some cases they found syringes, I believe, not in Dulce, but in other cases. And Chris probably knows more about that than me, because that was more of a nationwide thing. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just a handful of things that have been found at mutilation sites. They found a satchel, like a military issue satchel, and I think there was a scalpel and a cow's ear, if I remember correctly. That was found, I think, in Weld or Logan County on the Front Range, about the same time of the initial Dulce cases in 76, but possibly 75. But this is, like I said, this type of physical evidence is extremely rare. Occasionally, you'll get evidence of a prop wash. I had a couple of cases in the 70s where it appeared a helicopter had sat down. The downdraft from the rotors had flattened the grass in an area that was approximately the size of the prop wash of a helicopter. So these types of, you know, hints and of evidence, if you will, again, are pretty rare. But this is all before, you know, and Greg, you brought the Dulce base up. This is all before the initial stories started to come out about the Dulce base, partially through the Paul Benowitz saga, which we've talked about on the Paracast a number of times. We've had Greg Bishop on. Of course, he wrote the book Project Beta, which is probably the most in-depth look at that case. Phil Schneider has been mentioned, Krista Tolton, others who were involved in the early days of the rumors of the Dulce base. But what did your dad think about that? I know he was pretty skeptical about a lot of these, you know, more fantastic claims. Anthony Sanchez, for instance, says he has a colonel that claims there's an alien base under there. Where did your dad come down on all that? And how about you? I mean, you're law enforcement too. I mean, you know the area pretty well, so.
Well, that brings up a good point. We were talking about evidence found at the mutilations. Well, my dad never ruled out that they weren't placing that evidence there to throw off investigators. He was that meticulous. So now getting into the Dulce base story, we lived there. We saw everything that happened there. So when Paul Benowitz first came out with this story of a Dulce base, they kind of shrugged it. My dad kind of just shrugged it off, but he looked into it, and he did that with everything. Whether it's a weird theory, a solid theory, he nitpicked it, and that's what you have to do as an investigator. So the key to the Paul Benowitz story is he showed up with five black and white photos, and four of the five didn't show anything except for one, and even the one, the photo shows what he says is a crashed Delta ship. Not a crashed UFO, not a crashed alien ship, just a Delta ship. Well, lo and behold, my dad and John Gilley, Edmund Gomez, some other investigators went up and they found that crash site. So basically, Paul Binowitz would give my dad information that was about 80% correct. And my dad was kind of amazed where he was getting it from, because Paul wasn't from Dulce. We lived there and he would come up with stuff and he was accurate. And to help people figure this out, because there's so much confusion and there's so much junk floating around about Dulce Base, the 80% that was correct is everything pretty much Paul Binowitz said, it with the exception of aliens. You take the alien part out of it, and Paul was pretty much spot on his information. Of course, we found out later through Greg Bishop and some other resources where he was getting his information, which was the Air Force. But he was accurate with a lot of his stuff, with the exception of aliens. So that's what started the whole Dulce Base. Of course, people have added to it. For me, it's easy. I've read some of the stuff, Colonel X. I knew that was bogus, about a page into the story. Just because I lived in the area, I knew that the story wasn't right. Plus, I know the Paul Binowitz story because I met Paul. Paul wasn't crazy. A lot of people have kind of misrepresented him as being crazy. He was actually a sharp guy. He was a lot like my dad, where he's also very meticulous in his research also. So they put in a lot of hard work and a lot of hours. But that's where the Dulce Base started, was through Paul and the Air Force. But the mutilations, the UFOs, sightings up in Dulce were going on before Paul ever got involved in the stories.
Right. Looking at this whole kind of, I don't know, it's almost a myth that's grown up about this particular subject of a base at Dulce. Some of my digging has uncovered what could possibly be a rationale to have a facility there. And because of Gas Buggy, which we discussed earlier, which did introduce radiation into the area, one theory has it that they went ahead and built an underground facility there to store nuclear waste because there was already elevated levels of radiation in the area and they could hide it easier. So, and that the alien base story, placing this facility under Archuleta Mesa, was actually a red herring to a facility that was under Mount Archuleta. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Yes, and that's actually probably a pretty good theory, but it's just something we haven't been able to prove yet. And we're looking into it because we're also looking at the cancer rates are very high in that area. Of course, knowing something and proving something are two different things, unfortunately.
Right.
But when people are chasing aliens, they're not focusing on what's right in front of them. And that's a more realistic approach on what was really happening. There's something up there. Now, people want to assume it's aliens. There's never been proof of alien, any type of aliens at the Dulce Base.
Or anywhere.
But there was a lot of military activity. It came from the military. They actually divulged their own secrets. They made a mistake giving that information to Paul. You got to go where the evidence follows. It takes you, and it takes you to certain parts of it, and filtering it is the hard part, and that's what the purpose of the book was, to get people back on track and get them looking where they should be looking. Because if there is contamination, American people need to know about it.
Well, I've heard that the area surrounding Dulce has some of the highest rates of environmental cancers in the nation. And there's a scientist, a doctor that you and I both know, who's working very quietly and sort of behind the scenes, working on a survey of above-ground radiation levels in the area. How much work have you done looking into radiation in the environment up there? And what's a progress report on what this doctor's been doing?
Actually, I've done a lot of research into it because that's more of the story, and I know that kind of burst the balloon for a lot of people that want to go find aliens up in Dulce, but that's the reality of what's really a lot of the stuff that's going on. He's still doing research into it. I've been doing research. The hard part with this cancer stuff is if you try to gather statistics, you'll get 20 different answers from 20 different health organizations. And they're going to blame your lifestyle choices, how much you eat, how much you drink, where you live. So proving, like I said earlier, proving something and knowing something are two different things. And that's been the hardest part. So there needs to be more research done on this, especially the water tables, and that doctor was looking into some of that stuff, and hopefully we'll keep pushing it forward, and we're still looking into it also.
When we get into our next segment, I'm going to want to ask a few questions here, not to interrupt Chris because he's doing an interview for the show and the book, but a few questions about the rumored alien connection with all this stuff. Greg Valdez joins us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Gold. If you listen to the radio, watch TV, or surf the net, you are hearing about gold. Eventually you will ask yourself, is gold right for me? The answer might surprise you. We protect ourselves and our families from many things. Do you have medical insurance? Is your home insured? Do you carry life insurance? How about financial insurance? If you own gold, then the answer is yes. If you don't own gold, the question is, why don't you have financial insurance? We put our faith in things we trust. Do you trust the dollar? Do you trust the economy? Do you trust the government? Gold has always been something you can trust. For thousands of years, people have put their faith in gold. Where will you put your faith? Now is the time to protect yourself and your family. Call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242. And ask for Jim Parker. Let me help you get started today. 1-800-686-2237, extension 242.
We live in a complicated society. Stressful issues are always popping up. Have you ever been treated unfairly by someone? Have you ever been overcharged for a repair? Have you ever signed a contract or a document, worried about identity theft? How many times have you been in those unique situations where you just wanted to call an attorney to find out if you're right or wrong, or what your legal rights are? But every time you think about calling an attorney, what do you think about first? That's right. Who do you call, and how much will it cost? Our friends at Legal Shield have found a solution. With a nationwide network of 6,900 attorneys who average 19 years of experience, Legal Shield's law firms take over 40,000 calls per week helping their members. For less than $20 per month, you can have access to Legal Shield on everything from the trivial to the traumatic. Let Legal Shield stand up for your rights at lsprotection.com. That's lsprotection.com. Or call 855-340-SAVE, 855-340-7283.
How's your pH today? Are you acidic? How alkaline is your blood and body? What is the pH of the water you drink? We are AlkaVision, and we have the answers. Drinking pure, high alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining vibrant health and high energy, because bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. If your drinking water isn't at a pH level of 8 or higher, boost it with AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops. Our unique formula will alkalize your water, ridding your body of harmful toxins and acid, and help regain energy and health. Simply add 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops to help your body rid itself of acidic waste, increase oxygen, and raise the pH of your body to optimal levels. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com, spelled AlkaVision.com, or call 800-518-7615, 800-518-7615. Alkalize your body, supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris O'Brien is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the home of Greg Valdez, and he's written a fascinating new book covering the life of Gabe Valdez, who investigated the Dulce Base stories and cattle mutilations. So, Greg, I want to ask you here. When people talk of cattle mutilations, invariably there is that UFO and or alien connection. So what's the reality check here?
Well, I like to see if they're connected to aliens. I've never seen proof of it, so I like to see someone proof, and it's fine if they believe in that. There's no, I'm not shooting that down, but there's just never been evidence of that, especially in the Dulce area. If people have evidence, it'd be nice to see it, because it's always been tied into government or humans. If you follow that trail, it'll take you down a clearly marked trail from all the stuff I've seen that my dad's ever gathered.
Now, that's one of the things here that can be said about probably more than a few UFO sightings. You can trace it to tests of secret aircraft, some sort of government efforts. That's not unusual, is it?
No, and that's part of the Dulce story. The book, it goes into detail because we were actually able to take photographs of these aircraft up in the Dulce area. So in the book, I call it Area 52. I just don't have a better explanation or name for it, but it seems like Dulce is just an off-site testing facility for a lot of their secret, the military's secret projects. That's what the evidence points to. And we were able to take several photographs, different photographs of this military technology. It's not alien. It's just high-tech reconnaissance aircraft that the military wants to keep classified. And I know that's boring for people, but that's what it is.
Guys, can we then see if there are certain offenders out there who feel it's much better for their agendas to push the alien connection with all this stuff?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense to me, because if you look at the timeline, you talk about Roswell. You guys were talking about Aztec a little bit earlier. 47 was the key year where a lot of this stuff starts, where you have Roswell, Project Blue Book, different crashes. But if the aliens are kind of sporadic, the stories come in and out, but there's not really a good time frame. But if you look at it, in the books documented the technology that's actually been around for a long time, you can see the military's been involved with a lot of the secret aircraft technology since around the same time period. And then it all starts, the puzzle starts to come together if you know where to look and what to look for. If you're looking for aliens, you're not going to find too much stuff out there. But if you look for specific propulsion systems, like laser propulsion systems, microwave propulsion systems, it'll get you back in line on where a lot of these potential UFO sightings probably are. And it all fits with the time frame of 47, 50. The government was working on these type of, we call them UFOs just because they don't look like conventional aircraft, but that technology has been around for a while. And there are some smart scientists that work out there, and it's not out of the question for them to develop some of these aircraft. In Dulce, we were able to take photographs of this high-tech aircraft, and this was back in the 80s. It was invisible and silent. It has nothing to do with UFOs or aliens.
Yeah, describe some of the shots. I know your dad was convinced at one point in towards the end of the 70s that lighter-than-air craft were being used. Why don't you describe what you remember? As you said, it was invisible, but you have photographs. I'm a little confused on that. Plus, also microwave and laser propulsion. I'm a little confused about those terms. But why don't you describe some of the craft that was seen by people around there, including your dad and yourself?
Well, when they first started seeing these lights, they were seeing the common orange light, which resembled what most people would call a UFO. That's no big deal. So they'd see it disappear, fly in unconventional ways, up, down, sideways, from one place to another. So that's what kind of was associated with Dulce. That's why a lot of these people came to Dulce. As time went on, though, my dad was able to figure out, and this was up at Mount Archuleta where the Dulce base was supposed to be, and this came from Paul Binowitz. They figured out that the camera lens would pick up this aircraft where the naked eye wouldn't see, and that's part of the camouflage system. Of course, now if you do research on it, the government has it. It's currently available. It's somewhat classified.
What, like cloaking?
Yeah.
Cloaking devices?
It's called optical camouflage. They use LED lights to thin light waves. Mm-hmm. And that's why the camera picks it up and your eye doesn't pick it up. So my dad stumbled onto it. They were just taking random pictures of the area. And when they would go develop the film, no digital cameras back then. This is an old-fashioned film. These aircraft would pop up in the photographs. And other researchers have also found that I don't know if they necessarily know what they found, but they figured that out. And Paul Binowitz helped get this story going but he tipped my dad to take pictures, and a lot of times it would come out, and sure enough, they would come out. To add to that story, when one of the photographs that was taken up by Mount Archuleta, where the Dulce base is supposed to be, Los Alamos Labs, CIA, a guy with the CIA NSA connection became involved and kindly took that photo and had it enlarged. And when he enlarged it, of course, we had Los Alamos Labs enlarge it. You can see the graphic detail. It's not an alien craft, but it's a pretty high-tech American aircraft. There's where a lot of the secrecy comes in and the kind of the hot potato of, well, how much do you want to declassify before you get in trouble? And it was pretty apparent. And this was back in the mid-80s. They've had this technology. So you can imagine what they have now. And that's been the big catching point for a lot of the alien people is they say, well, we don't know about this technology, so it has to come from aliens. And that's not necessarily always the case because there's a lot of technology that we don't know about just because it's classified. And now if you go back and research historical stuff, it's very boring, I'll tell you, because I've done a ton of it. It dates back to the 40s, even the 1935 and some of the early years. So that's kind of been the big catching point for a lot of the alien communities. What's weird, we don't know about it, so therefore it has to come from aliens.
It must be aliens.
in my research, my dad's research, that's not the case. We're able to tie it to humans and scientists and government projects is what it comes down to.
Well, you bring up an interesting point that your dad was digging around into, and Paul Benowitz were digging around into areas that were possibly highly classified. And that attracted the attention, I think, of some individuals within the government intelligence community. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the things that were found in houses, some of the odd circumstances that happened at the height of some of this research work?
Well, Greg Bishop has documented in his book, Project Beta, how the NSA and CIA was involved in a massive surveillance program on Paul Benowitz. But they were also monitoring my dad and the Gomez family because we were able to find a listening. My dad found a listening device in our house. The Gomez family found two of them in their house. They were keeping close tabs. And keep in mind, Dulce, my dad was a police officer up there. We never locked the doors. We used to leave the keys in the truck. So it's not. It wouldn't have been that hard to actually break in. We drive to out of town and
people, locks only keep out honest people.
Yeah, but Manuel Gomez was a different story, especially after the mutilations. They were cautious, and some professionals went in to place those devices. It wasn't some rinky-dink job. Of course, these were the days of the rotary phones. You couldn't just hack into it with a computer like you can now with the digital stuff. But
it was harder then because you physically had to tap the actual wire pointing to your individual connection. We'll have more to come. Yes, indeed. Greg Valdez joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
There are those curious about bitcoins and those using and making money with bitcoins. What are bitcoins? A bitcoin is the first decentralized currency that can be easily transferred from person to person over the internet. No bank needed. This means lower fees and accounts can never be frozen, limited, or closed. You are in control of your money. And the best part? You can start earning and making money with bitcoins right away. No computer or expertise is required to earn money with bitcoins, and a growing number of merchants now accept bitcoins. Plus, they're easily exchanged for dollars, euros, and more. Learn more about the easiest, cheapest, most profitable way to enter the Bitcoin market and get paid every 2 weeks by one of the fastest growing Bitcoin miners in the world at cloudhashing.com. just like it sounds, cloudhashing.com. That's cloudhashing.com. We mine your business.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey water filters, for the love of clean water.
Raising your own chickens for food is great, but how will you get them ready for the dinner table? Do it the fast and easy way with a power plucker from PowerPlucker.com. The power plucker is a simple attachment that works with a power drill and removes feathers in a flash. Whether you're a homesteader or a bird hunter, you'll save time and money, and we guarantee you'll love it. Order right now at PowerPlucker.com and receive free shipping. PowerPlucker.com, the only drill-powered poultry plucker.
When you need it the most, will your generator, power equipment, or vehicle be ready? Gas and diesel fuels go bad quickly when stored, and more than half of generator failures during disasters occur as a result of expired fuel. PRI fuel stabilizers keep your fuel fresh for when you need it most. Nuclear power stations, emergency service providers, and ships at sea rely on PRI fuel stabilizers. And you can too. Call 888-776-9373 or visit PRIproducts.com to find the dealer nearest you.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So the impression I get, Greg Valdez, on the Paracast with Gene and Chris, is that if we go back in time, before we had all the digital technology, it was a lot harder to do all this stuff, spying, tapping phones, and all that.
Yes, you're 100% correct. Because they actually have to physically place the listening devices on the phones. Like, now you can do it in a computer from Washington or 1,000 miles away, and they just hack into the line. But back then, they actually had to place the bugs on the phones themselves. And like I said, my dad found one at our house, and the Gomez family found a couple at their house.
Give us a time frame on that. And what was your dad's thinking about that? I mean, what did he do once he found these devices?
Well, it was around the early 80s, and it's when Paul Benowitz became involved with Richard Doty and Ernest Edwards. Because when my dad later came to the conclusion, is, and we later figured out just going through like Greg Bishop's work, that Doty and Edwards actually leaked out too much information. So they were actually monitoring Doty and Edwards, and that's why they were tapping my dad's phone. Emmanuel Gomez's, they were trying to do damage control to see how far the their information had leaked out. And that sounds like a pretty good assessment from the stuff my dad had covered.
Homer Simpson moments, I guess, huh?
When you think about it, the whole Dulce story was started by the Air Force. They gave up a lot of their classified stuff because a lot of this stuff would still be secret if they wouldn't have provided it to Paul Benowitz. And going back to surveillance, we were at Paul's house one night because we used to come down quite a bit. My dad would visit with him. We'd stay there for hours. We went out to eat at a restaurant, and he told us, he goes, that Jeep is following us. I still remember the color of the Jeep, the guy driving it. Sure enough, they followed us to go eat dinner, and then we went back to Paul's house, and they followed us back to the house. So my dad knew enough about being in law enforcement. He knew that it wasn't a game anymore because they found the listening devices. We had people following us around. So, but once again, that's nothing to do with aliens. That just shows you that people are interested in what he was finding. It wasn't a game. He found out pretty quick. They weren't messing around.
I have a question, Greg. What about Freedom of Information Act? Did you or your dad ever send these requests to see what the government had on file about you two?
No, my dad messed with it a little bit, but this is a kind of a tip for people to file Freedom of Information Act request, because they're not going to give you stuff they want classified. So if you send a Freedom of Information Act request for about UFOs, you're not going to get anything. I mentioned earlier, do Freedom of Information Act requests for propulsion, laser propulsion systems. Some of this stuff that you think might not be, it's boring, but that's the key to it. Look into propulsion systems. You got to look, think like an investigator. Don't look at the obvious. Ask for things that are probably declassified now. Of course, back in 79, 85, they were classified still. But now you probably have a lot easier time getting a hold of a lot of these documents. And there's a ton of it out there. You can get a lot of it just off the internet from the DOE websites, their archives. But if you do Freedom of Information Act request, you just got to know how to request the information. It's knowing what you're looking for.
Right.
So hopefully the book will kind of get you in the area of what to look for and what to ask for. So, but that, because that opens the door, like Project Aquarius, they had people spinning their wheels looking for documents. And if it's really classified, you're not going to get it anyway, even though they're supposed to give it to you.
Right.
But if you have to go through other angles and kind of go through the back doors, what you have to do to get good information.
You know, you mentioned before that your dad dovetailed some of his efforts with other law enforcement groups. What did he learn from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police? Because they did quite a bit of work up there in the 70s and 80s, and they did a lot of forensic testing. What sort of impression did he have of their effort, and what were they finding?
They were basically finding a lot of the same stuff that he was finding in Dulce. Their main focus was trying to get trends or patterns figured out so they could try to catch them in the act, which is easier said than done. But a lot of the stuff mirrored what was happening in the United States. It just happened to be in Canada. So they were sharing a lot of stuff. I haven't looked at it for a while. I'd have to dig it up and look at it. So I don't remember all of it off the top of my memory, but I'd have to dig it up. But they were finding a lot of the similar stuff. He also worked with Sheriff Tex Graves up in Logan County, Colorado, and they were sharing notes. Which you don't see that this being law enforcement. Law enforcement agencies are supposed to work together, but they do not like they used to in the 70s and 80s. And it's unfortunate because that's how you share a lot of good information, is by working with these people throughout the country, because this headache is spread out so far that it's hard to coordinate stuff. Someone in Texas might have a vital piece of evidence, but if you never connect to them, it's hard to put the pieces together.
Yeah, that's why the efforts of Project Stigma, which was Tom Adams' effort to be a clearinghouse for mutilation-related information, which he, as soon as he found out a case would happen in a particular state, county in a state, he would immediately contact the sheriff, send him the information that he had, and put him in touch with other sheriffs and create a network of law enforcement officials who could compare notes with each other. And I have always thought that Dulce was kind of almost a standalone situation because of the Jicarilla Apache Reservation there. And I've always felt that there was something key about the fact that there was a res there, and some of the cases in South Dakota as well on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And you didn't see these cases on Indian reservations except for these two. And I've always felt that there's some clue there for us. And one thing that some of the naysayers about the mutilation phenomena in particular have said, Greg, is that only small kind of family ranchers reported mutilation cases, that none of the big, huge cattle operations in Texas, some of the feedlots in Kansas, Nebraska, ever reported these cases. What do you think of that? Do you think it's possibly because of the location that these cases, these farmers are being, ranchers are being victimized? What's your thinking? What was your dad's thinking?
Well, going back earlier, like I mentioned, they were trying to find patterns. It looked like the Gomez herd was targeted for genetic reasons. That herd had been in the area for around 100 years because the Gomez family founded the town of Dulce. They were there before the tribe was there. They would bring in 1,000 head of Mexican steers to the Dulce area for summer grazing every year. They never mutilated any of those cattle. So the trend they noticed in the Dulce areas, Raleigh Tafoya is a good example. His cattle have been around for several generations. And you go back into the testing of like radiation type issues. It looked like they were targeting herds that were from the area for a specific reason. Let's assume they're doing radiation testing. It doesn't do any good if you're testing a cow from Texas. It's in the Dulce area for 2 months out of the year, and then they ship it off to slaughter or back to a winter range. You know, so it always seemed the cows that they would find were indigenous to that area. And that's the pattern that they seem to notice and develop. And going back to, you mentioned the Indian reservations, that might be a key reason why Dulce had such was such a hot spot, because some of the research I did for the book, it looks like a lot of the Indian reservations were targeted, because if you look at Yucca Flats, Dulce is a good example, a lot of military testing was traditionally done near Indian reservations. China Lakes, similar. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other side issue I don't really want to get into now, because that's another conversation. But because it's boring, it's not very fun research. But if you go down that road, it'll open your eyes to a lot of different things, where people kind of tend to get focused on one specific thing and ignore the little stuff. But the little stuff is what gives you the big picture, and you'll be able to put the puzzle together a lot easier than all the little things.
A little bit later in the show, we're going to have a few questions from our listeners of Greg Valdez as we focus on the whys and wherefores of cattle mutilations. And one question I'm going to have, which Greg can answer in our next segment, is, in all, how often does this happen? And is this phenomenon strictly concentrated in the U.S.? Is it worldwide? Is it just specific countries? Interesting to find out. We have Greg Valdez joining us. You're on with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Attention, citizens of Northern Arizona. Are you prepared? If not, now's your chance to get prepared at the Arizona Survivalist Prepper Expo. August 24th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Tim's Toyota Center in Prescott Valley. Visit with Arizona-based and national suppliers of such items as freeze-dried foods, solar ovens, solar equipment, tactical gear, camping gear, water filtration supplies, and much more. Do you need a bug-out bag? Do you need to stock up on freeze-dried food? Are you curious what a solar oven is? Take a tour of the ultimate bunker, a portable above or below ground survival shelter. Visit with doomsday prepper stars from around Arizona, such as Tim Ralston of Gear Up and Brian Moffat of Extreme Defense USA. Informative speakers will be providing valuable insight every hour on such topics as long-term food storage and emergency first aid skills. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your neighbors. We won't rest until every citizen in Arizona is prepared. Visit our website, ArizonaSurvivalistShows.com.
For over 5 years, you've been hearing about the Berkey guy, so you may know a few things about him. For example, you are well aware of the superior quality and effectiveness of Berkey water filters and accessories. But did you know the Berkeys have had independent lab tests done to prove just how effective they are? It's true, and he can email you the test results. Just visit GoBerkey.com. You may also know that the Berkey guy has helped tens of thousands of people get better prepared. Now here's something you may not know. GoBerkey.com has amazing specials and deals all the time on a wide variety of survival and preparedness products. Most ready to ship same day.
Visit The Berkey Guy at GoBerkey.com and be sure to click the red Products on Sale Now button. You can always call toll-free 877-886-3653. Again, that's 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com, home of The Berkey Guy.
Hello, it's Tom Chenault from The Tom Chenault Show. We are experts in home-based business and residual income. We show people how to make money from their home, either part-time or full-time. And in partnership with Genesis Communication Network, we've organized a team to fight back about people not having money, time, or health. And we need your help. What we want you to do is, if you've got an interest in building an organization to fight back against people taking our money, taking our time, and taking our health, we want to talk to you. All you need to do is call this number, 855-308-8326. Again, all you want to do is call 855-308-8326. You can make a tremendous amount of money and end up fighting for a great cause. Please call us right now.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris in the PowerCast, we continue as we explore Greg Valdez and his new book covering what's going on at Delcy and the work of his father, Gabe Valdez. But here's a question I posed at the end of our last segment, and that is, how frequent are these things occurring, number one? Number two, worldwide, U.S., or just a few countries phenomenon?
I know they had a couple in Missouri within the last week or two, because I saw some news reports. They've also had some dolphin mutilations in the Gulf Coast fairly recently. They did have some in South America. There was a hot spot there for a while. So it's a worldwide thing. It's not just limited to the United States. So there's been reports that I've heard of pretty much worldwide. And a lot in South America, from what I know.
Everywhere but India, where cows are sacred.
They don't touch them over there, I guess.
They have McDonald's in India. Did you know that?
No, I'll go now. Yeah. They have McDonald's.
Of course, they don't serve beef, which is kind of an oxymoron. But in 2002, Gene, we saw a huge wave of cases, hundreds of cases over the ensuing couple of years, 2002 through 2004 in Argentina, parts of Brazil. We've had Philip Hoyle on the program from the Animal Pathology Field Unit in England. They've had numerous sheep mutilations along the Welsh border in around Shrewsbury, that area, Midlands England, Midwest England. There have been cases, livestock death cases reported in Puerto Rico, the Canary Islands. We've had cases in Africa. There have been a number of cases all the way back to the turn of the 19th century. There were sheep mutilations in Australia. They've had quite a number of cases over the years down under. So this is a worldwide phenomenon, which some of the naysayers in terms of the military theory say, well, what, is the U.S. government flying around the world doing all this?
Well, you know, that's the question I was going to ask you.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's got to be some sort of multinational thing. I think there's some sort of World Health Organization type organization that's probably behind this, and I just find it interesting that this sampling team seems to be, as Greg has pointed out, there's some sort of genetic component to it, but there's also some sort of actual physical location component. It's not always which particular cow is, where that particular cow is located in the environment. So I think it's a very complicated picture. I think that there is an effort globally that is monitoring livestock. And obviously you would think that the U.S. would be very, very involved at the very top of this, probably coordinating it. But this is a real sticking point for any sort of U.S. government sort of scenario in theory. If it's the government, then we must be flying around with impunity around the world doing this without ever getting caught, with no choppers breaking down, with no teams getting spotted. These guys are real slick, and you know, there's just no getting around that fact. And the more that I dig into this subject,
for my new book, and reading Greg's book and revisiting some of the cases. It's just mind-boggling that these people have been able to get away with this for so long. And looking at some of these pictures that Greg has, there's no way that predators could microwave a whole side of an animal so that the meat under the hide is literally cooked. And that the one case is the one that Jerry Valerio, the brand inspector, got so sick he ended up having to retire. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes, that's correct. The rancher that had the mutilated cow covered it with a tarp. So when Jerry went to look at the animal, he lifted the tarp and inhaled whatever chemicals or toxins were in the animal. He almost died from it. He got very sick. So yeah. It wasn't a good. So to give you an idea, when my dad started working for NIDS, they would wear full contamination suits when they would go to these mutilation sites. Of course, when he was with state police, he just wore his uniform or his coveralls, but he was kind of a germaphobe to begin with. My dad was. He was always cautious. And he was always cautious around these mutilations. But if NIDS was putting on the full hazmat suits, that kind of gives an indication of what you're messing with or what was in the cattle or what they were finding, because Kenneth Rommel came out with his report that kind of did more damage than anything back in the 70s, 80s, where he said that predators were involved that had nothing to do with, you know, all these veterinarians that he claimed supported his work. But NIDS came in with a whole different angle, and they took it pretty serious. So if they're taking it serious and these veterinarians were starting to sign off on these things and actually putting their name on documents saying it had chemicals or whatever the case, that kind of shows you the severity of what they're dealing with. Because the early 70s, a lot of these veterinarians wouldn't even touch the mutilation. They want nothing to do with it because they were worried about their career, their reputation. They just wouldn't get involved. So they had a hard time even getting help. My dad did in Tex Graves up in Colorado because the veterinarians wouldn't even touch them, which that kind of changed with NIDS, where they were actually writing reports, which was good. Of course, not everything was disclosed or through NIDS, and all the findings weren't disclosed, but at least they were doing quality work and research on it. But like I said earlier, if they're putting on bunny suits, that kind of gives you an indication of what they're doing.
Do you know approximately how many cases your dad investigated for NIDS? I know he did some around the Arroyo Hondo, north of Taos, the Red River area. About how many cases was he sent out on? And did he only exclusively operate in the Four Corners area, or did they fly him other places?
I'd have to go look at his files specifically. I know he has at least 20, is a rough guess, from New Mexico. He never did anything outside of New Mexico. Maybe Colorado, he might have done some stuff across the border, but he wasn't involved in any of the Utah stuff that NID was involved in. They usually send their own guys up there, or they have their own field investigators. So he was kind of the New Mexico connection, because he knew everyone in New Mexico. Right. And he was here, so it made more sense. I think they had another investigator that handled other parts of the country.
I'm trying to understand a little bit about this here. Okay, so it's being done by governments. There may be some hazardous materials or waste involved. So the long and short of it is, why are they doing it?
Well, a lot of the early stuff tend to look like radiation. A lot of it tend to look like biogerm warfare testing also, which I didn't get to earlier.
Let's start with that now. Okay, biogerm warfare. Ugh.
Yeah, it's pretty nasty stuff. And part of the Geneva Convention that bans all these countries from using germ warfare, what exempts them from that ban is if they create non-lethal weapons. And that kind of opens the political door where they don't have to worry about so much oversight on their research. So then after seeing that, now you start looking at the people involved in NIDS and some of this other research. They're all in the non-lethal research field. And that kind of opens up the doors. And they were finding traces of potential anthrax testing in some of the early cows. One of the cows on the southern end of the reservation of Dulce, they found an animal that survived the mutilation. The ear was cut off, but the animal didn't die.
You know, I like to look at what Dr. McCoy said. Where's the logic in that? In one of the Star Trek episodes, maybe he was trying to channel Mr. Spock. And that is, okay, if you're going to do testing on cattle, possibly to see the effects of germ warfare, why would you do it at random around the world? Wouldn't you basically set up your own ranch and do it all privately rather than drive people totally nuts, which is the impact of what they're doing now?
Yeah, that's a common question that comes up. First, there's a lot of things you're dealing with. You have liability issues. If you're the one that created the contamination, you're not going to go out and admit that you're the one researching contamination. If you're the one that implemented it or put it into the community, that's one of the issues you're dealing with.
It's also control.
It's a control thing?
Control for ranching communities that tend to be more conservative, militia, patriot-minded. You know, the Weld County, for instance, probably has the highest per capita incidence of militia members up there. And also, if you can introduce things like chronic wasting disease in the herds of deer and elk in areas where there's lots of hunters who happen to be militia types, I mean, societal control mechanisms can be very subtle. And the cattle mutilation phenomenon, I think, is a multiple agenda program. You have lots of things dovetailing together. The most common question I get is, well, how come they leave the cows there? Well, looking at a law enforcement officer here, I can tell you right now, if you take the cows, grand theft. If you leave it there, it's plausible deniability, and everybody scratches their head. He drags it off to a bone pile, out of sight, out of mind. Most of these cases aren't reported. I think we're seeing sort of almost a form of domestic terrorism going on here. We're terrorizing ranchers, possibly trying to drive small ranchers out of business. So the big agribusiness, the biggest moneymaker in agriculture is beef, by the way. So if you drive out the little guys, it just makes more room for the big guys.
And it raises prices as a result. We'll get into more of this in a moment. Greg Valdez joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Thomas Jefferson once said, "When the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty." Our God-given right to life and liberty, and the right to determine what is best for our lives and our families' health, are in jeopardy. If we the people do not diligently assert these rights, they may be taken away and lost forever. Utopia Silver is known for fighting for health freedom, and we will not meekly allow ourselves to be led as lambs to the slaughter, sitting passively by. And accepting the chains of slavery that are being placed on America is not an option. Please stand with Utopia Silver in this fight. Utopia Silver carries some of the most effective colloidal silver products on the market and numerous other high-quality health supplements. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's U-T-O-P-I-A, utopiasilver.com. Or call us today at 1-888-213-4338. 1-888-213-4338.